Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. A very warm welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. You can first hear Tech Talk every Tuesday here on the station at 1 p.m. Or if you miss that, we're around on a Thursday evening at 9 p.m. or even Saturday tea time at 5. Who knew? And if you prefer a podcast, well, grab that each Friday from your podcast provider of choice. Tech Talk, of course, it is the community's opportunity to come together to explore the world of technology. We always love to receive your emails. We've got a couple coming up later on. Do get in touch. You can send a traditional text, email, or hit record and send us a message. And send that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K, at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, Hubert speaks with Tom Pay from Waymap, which you can use for both indoor and outdoor navigation. I'll be demonstrating the Zoom H1 handy recorder, and we'll have the latest installment in our popular series on the Windows Narrator screen reader. So stick around. It's another Tech Talk. Welcome in, Callum Stoneman. It's just you and I this week, sir.
It is. Yeah, I'm sure we can make it work.
And how are you? What's in your tech dar this week?
I'm good. Yeah, I've been hearing quite a lot this week about the Smart Vision 3, which is a new phone from Capsys. That's K-A-P-S-Y-S, I believe. I've not actually heard of the Smart Vision range before. I've heard of the Mini Vision from them, although I don't know much about it. But what's interesting about this Smart Vision 3 is that it's an Android smartphone, fully Google certified, so you can get everything from the Play Store and the Google Assistant and all your kind of Google services on there. But it's as well as the touchscreen to operate it, it's got your traditional T9 keypad as well. So I think the aim that they're going for is a fully fledged Android smartphone with the choice of touchscreen or keypad for both, you know, operation and for typing as well. So obviously I haven't been able to get hands on with it, but an interesting little device. It could be quite a big rival to the Blindshell Classic, I think.
It's an interesting point, isn't it, this sort of Google certification, because devices that are not Google certified, sometimes you find that you can't install content from the Play Store. You've got to go off and find an APK and sort of sideload it, which all sounds a bit geeky, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, the other thing is that the Blindshell Classic, I mean, I'm not sure if that is Google certified or not, but if I'm right in my understanding of this, is that they've got their own kind of app store with their selection of apps that they've developed to kind of, or they've adapted, I should say, to work on the Blindshell. And there's still a brilliant selection out there. But yeah, you can't just grab anything from the Play Store, as far as I know, whereas you can with this. And that's kind of one of the drawbacks of the Blindshell. I think it's a great device, but in terms of if you wanted, say, your banking app on there, you'd have to wait for them to adapt it and then wait for them to adapt it again when the updates come out and things like that. So I'm interested to see how this goes down, this Smart Vision.
But then the other question, I suppose, is how many, you know, Blindshell users would be wanting to do their banking on an app? So
yeah,
it's, horses for courses sometimes. And even if a device isn't Google certified, you can install some apps from the Play Store. We should make that clear. It's usually the ones that, require a screen and specific buttons. Callum, the other thing, of course, now we're expecting in September announcements from Microsoft and, you know, sort of Apple September event. We're expecting iPhone 15 and all of that. And then Microsoft, they've got an event coming up. They're going to be updating Windows 11 potentially. Are you looking forward to either of those events, Callum?
Yeah, I mean, I always look forward to the Apple event. I don't think I'll be upgrading this year because my 13 Pro is still running very nicely. They'd have to be something huge in the iPhone 15, I think, to make me want to upgrade at this stage. But what I am looking forward to is iOS 17, because I'm looking forward to particularly the point and speak feature, which is going to help you with kind of identifying the buttons on household appliances and things like that. Well, that's the example that they gave anyway. Windows 11, excited to see what they do with... we've got Narrator coming up, and there's been some huge updates to that in Windows 11. There's definitely a lot of development going on, so exciting to see what they do with Narrator. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot more there.
A new volume mixer in Windows 11 coming as well, and yes, support for 7-zip and RAW files. Are people still using RAW files? I remember those from back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah. Just back on the iPhone a second, it'll be interesting to see how everyone responds to the USB-C port. I remember years ago when Apple switched from the 30-pin to the Lightning connector, you know, and a lot of people at the time were very upset about that because they bought a lot of, you know, accessories that sort of worked with the old style connector. Do you think we're going to be in a world of dongles for Christmas?
I'm not sure. I think this is going to go down better, in my opinion, because if you remember, like, Lightning is Apple's kind of proprietary connection, whereas USB-C is so widely used nowadays. Most modern devices are using USB-C. And to be fair, I mean, I've got a wireless charger, so this doesn't bother me too much at the minute, but I would definitely be looking forward to USB-C coming to the iPhone, because I've got USB cables everywhere, little USB chargers and cables and, you know, little adapters where you can just plug directly in with USB-C, but you've still always got to have a Lightning cable with you as well.
There we are. Well, let us know what you think. Will you be updating to any of the new devices? Callum Stoneman, good to hear you. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk, ladies and gentlemen.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and with navigation apps and solutions being a very common topic when it comes to technology, today we will explore another one of these solutions. Joining us is the founder and chief executive officer of Waymap, Tom Pei. Welcome.
Oh, great. How are you? And thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you, and I'm very good, thank you. So let's talk about your app, Waymap, and can you tell us what Waymap is and how it works?
Okay, well, Waymap is an app that works both indoors and outdoors. It works on your mobile phone. It works up to 1 meter accuracy and 10 degree heading accuracy. In other words, it locates you. Now, this is really important. It locates you to within 1 meter, and it knows the way you're facing to within 10 degrees. Now, that is vital. The phone can be put in your pocket or carried, whatever way you want. So it can be used flexibly. As I said, it works both indoors and outdoors. And again, that means that it is designed to go from your home to your destination. And indeed, if we map the inside of a building, it could get you to your desk. It's available in many languages. It complies with the world standard ITU F921 on audio-based navigation for blind people, and with the American standard for the same thing. It also complies with, will comply, I should say, with the American standard for navigation for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And we're currently working on writing the standard in America for people who are deaf, hard of hearing, and deafblind.
There's many navigation solutions out there. What makes Waymap stand out from the other solutions out there?
The first thing is you don't have to expose your phone. You're not using your camera. The second thing is that you don't rely on Bluetooth beacons. Venues don't like putting Bluetooth beacons in because sometimes they fail, but also they give at best 5 meter accuracy. You don't need Wi-Fi signal. And the other thing is that if you put your phone on airplane mode, it will still navigate you. And no other solution available on the market will do that at the moment.
So let's talk about the technology behind Waymap. You know, it's capable of guiding you with airplane mode on, so it doesn't need signal. You know, how does all this work to be able to guide you without needing to use your camera or, you know, any signal?
Like any navigation app, it needs to know your starting point, so you can either inject that or would you, with data, you can take a fix if you're outdoors off GPS, or if you're indoors, you can take a fix from a point of interest. Once your phone knows where you're starting from and you tell it where you want to go, it will plot the best route to do it. And it does that because we already have maps of the destination of the routes that you need to go to. So we're able to calculate the best route. If you say, I want step-free access, then it'll route you through lifts. Or if not, then if you say, I don't like escalators, it will route you around escalators, and so on. So it'll pick the route that you want. And how it works is that we pretty much use the sensors on the phone. So the barometer, the accelerometer, and the gyroscope basically in the phone. And these things are they're quite cheap. So they don't, you know, they're not terribly accurate, but they are relatively accurate, if you know what I mean. So they so relative to the last reading, they're pretty accurate. We use statistical dead reckoning systems. So in other words, we assign 5,000 possible spaces per second to where your next step might be. And from that, we compute the most likely position of your next step. And so we know that we know where you want to go. And we know the direction in which you're facing. We know the speed at which you're walking. So we can calculate at 99.99999% accuracy where your next step is going to, the location of your next step. So there is a small amount of what we call drift that goes in. It's very minute, but if you extend that over, I don't know, 10 or 20 meters, you know, that drift, you know, it just accumulates. So at your next, say, the next action, you put your foot on an escalator, say, the barometer knows you're going up. So we know where that is. So we zero out every error that has the drift that has come into it. That means that we preserve the 1 meter accuracy target that we have for you. And it speaks the instructions to you. So it'll say, in 6 feet, turn right. Or it could say, turn to 3 o'clock. You know, so you can pick the way in which you want the instruction to come to you. But it will tell you, in X feet, X meters, X steps, turn right, turn to 3 o'clock. And it will tell you when you reach your destination. And it's, as I said, it's compliant with the standard. So the instructions are given in a particular way and at a particular frequency.
And when it comes to all the data that you uses with the maps and such, where is that data stored? Is that stored on your phone?
Correct, yeah. So it all works offline. But if you want to, for instance, now expand beyond navigation. So in other words, I want to catch the right train on the right platform at the right time. That means that you need to be, you need to have data access to the internet so that you can pick up on the feeds, the API feeds from the, say, the rail provider, from the transport provider, or from the airport provider, and so on, so that you have an idea of what's going along. All of that we also develop into it. But the basic routing is all done on your phone. All of the calculations are done on your phone. And in terms of privacy, we don't know who you are. We just know that you are using the app and you're in a particular place and you're using a particular route.
When it comes to seamlessly switching from indoor to outdoor navigation and potentially back to indoor again, how does Waymap achieve that seamless transition?
Because we've written our own outdoor and indoor algorithms. And so we don't need to switch between Google and Apple or some other system for outdoor navigation going to indoor. So the transitions, we manage them within our own app.
And naturally, this app requires to be, you know, installed within a city transport network and have the streets and everything there. What's the process like to get that installed within a city and, you know, its buildings?
Well, it's been currently being rolled out across Washington, D.C., which is 110 stations and 18,000 bus stops. So that's in the greater Washington area. The process is that outdoors, we can use a lot of data that's available publicly in order to be able to set up the outdoor maps and also, you know, to take the feeds in from the bus routes and the bus providers. So that's outdoors. Indoors, we do one of two things. Either we take a very accurate CAD drawing of the interior, or we scan it because, you know, we need maps that are 2 centimeter accurate. And a lot of underground or you know, other stations are not mapped to that level of accuracy. So we would survey it ourselves. That, you know, to do a station, let's say the size of King's Cross, for us to scan it would probably take us a day, eight hours. And then by the time we process it and put it into a map that can be used on your phone, we would just add maybe another week to it. So it's a it's a pretty quick and automatic process. So, you know, and there are lots of organizations and companies around that map venue. So, you know, there's no shortage of maps. If once the venue owner allows us to use that map for the purposes of navigating disabled people through their environment.
And when it comes to designing of the app itself, what are the accessibility features like? You know, what particular accessibility designs have you implemented?
The Waymap app is built on the principles of universal design. It is designed to work for anyone, and it's designed to work anywhere for anyone. That means that the level of personalization that is available within the app is quite large. So on top of the standard accessibility features for blind people, such that are available in the phone, which would be VoiceOver and TalkBack, you can then choose the walking pace. So my normal walking pace would be this. And the other thing is that I like to get my instructions in a particular way. So you can pick that. I like to get my instructions in a particular language. I like to get my instructions at this level of frequency. So you can change it as you get more familiar with routes. You can say, I really don't want to be hearing it every 10 meters. I could do it at every time I just need to make a turn or something. Whether I want to take stairs or not, so step-free access or not step-free access. And then it comes down to I like to know whether I want to be told to take a turn, either turn right or turn to 3 o'clock, go north, south, east, or west. So you can pick that. So the level of personalization that's available within it is huge, and it's worthwhile taking time when you're setting it up to use us fully. And the reason for that is that the app itself then is powered by AI. And that means as you begin to walk and as your behavior in walking changes from what you thought it would be, the app learns with you And becomes much more personalized for you and much more adapted for you. So after the first five walks, for instance, the navigation experience is really, really personalized to your style of walking and to your style of receiving instructions and so on. Yeah.
When it comes to user feedback that you've received, you know, what sort of feedback have you received and have you made any changes based on that feedback?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we started out on this journey, you know, we used a large number of O&Ms to develop the instructions and then we tested them out. So if we just work with blind people for a moment, then we tested them out with a large number of blind people in different parts of the world. And we got a lot of feedback. The other thing was that the user experience, you know, with, like any app, you start out with something and people will say, well, if the app did this, it'd be much better. So then you make changes to make the app better. Then they say, well, if you did this, it'd be much better. So constantly we are making amendments to the app and improvements to the app based on customer feedback. You know, we want to provide an experience for you, in other words, for an individual. So we need to know what works for you. And we've put some tools into the app that allow us to learn alongside you. But your feedback, we always listen to it. We always make changes. So I guess one of the big changes that we made was when we put you onto a platform, for instance, we put you onto the carriage that was nearest to the platform, to the ticket gate. People didn't like that, so we now give people an option to go to to a carriage of their choice, mainly but we recognize where the disabled carriage is supposed to be. You know, we've got to be guided by the rail company on that. We can navigate you to that. And then once you get off, we navigate you from there. So that, you know, it's just points of convenience, really. And also, some people would like to know, instead of just say in 3 meters turn right, they like to know in 3 meters at the ice cream shop turn right. Yeah. So we're able to add those type of features in, which kind of give a bit more context to the environment.
What can you tell us about its availability in the UK?
Right. We have been spending most of our time in the United States and in the Far East. We've recently just started to work in the UK. So there's a number of areas where we're currently trialing the app. In London, we're at up at Shepherd's Bush. We're putting it into the shopping mall up there, Westfield at Shepherd's Bush. It's available in Liverpool at Liverpool One, and it will shortly be available at Birmingham New Street and Birmingham International. But we are talking to a lot of the transport companies in the UK, and I think that over the next year or so, you will begin to see it being much more available. Again, you know, it's about blind people saying that this is something that they want. Budgets are tight at this present moment in time within the British transport industry, but nonetheless, you know, this isn't a relatively expensive solution for transport companies, so it should be, as I said, it's really up to users to push the demand. But the in the Far East and in the United States and in parts of Europe, you know, the demand is there and the budgets are there at the moment to get the job done.
What should users be aware of before they were to try Waymap?
Waymap is not a safety aid It does not keep you safe. It gives you access to infinite number of routes. You need to have really good mobility and transport training in order to be able to benefit from Waymap. So, you know, the services that the RNIB provide in terms of mobility and the use of transport, those are vital. Those are vital primary skills you must have, or, you know, be a competent guide dog user. These are the things that keep you safe. Waymap, once you have those skills, we can get you to far more routes, to far more places, far more easily than anything else that's available on the market at the moment.
Could you share with us any potential future developments coming to Waymap in the near future?
Waymap is as I said, is a location device. So one of the things that we will be, one of the features that we're hoping to put in probably by the middle of next year is that in retail, if you want to go to the supermarket and you have a shopping list, you should be able to preload that onto your phone, and Waymap will locate where those objects are. So where the sugar and the tea and milk and the coffee and so on, where they are, and it will guide you to within 1 meter of those, which means that independent shopping is about a year away.
That sounds quite impressive, to be fair. That is excellent. Well, Tom Pei, founder and chief executive officer of Waymap, thank you very much for coming on to talk to us about Waymap. Thank you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
And thank you for having me.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Now, there are no shortage of ways to record, whether you want to make a little bit of a voice note to yourself, a voice memo, maybe even record something to send into RNIB Connect Radio. You can simply fire up the Voices Memo app on your phone and make a voice recording and then share that via email. Dead easy. That's absolutely fine. But sometimes it is useful to have access to a dedicated recording device if you're concerned about preserving your smartphone's battery life, or maybe you want something that is a little bit higher quality. Then you can buy a digital recorder, and of course there are many products available, ranging in price from the tens of pounds up to many hundreds of pounds. And of course you can plug in external high-end microphones and make it really sophisticated if you want. But what if you want something that's sort of fairly basic but maybe a little bit of a step up from the phone and is a dedicated device? Well, I'm here to share with you the Zoom H1 handy digital recorder. This is Zoom's entry-level product, and I have the device in my hand, and I'm going to give you a physical description and just talk through some of the ways in which I use this device, and I'll let you hear a little bit of a recording of what it sounds like as well. So the recorder itself measures about 2 inches across, about an inch thick, and maybe about 5.5 inches long, with the buttons on the top surface and the microphones pointing away from us. You'll feel that actually the microphones, arranged in a sort of an XY configuration, are surrounded by a sort of a plastic framework. So you're going to want to put a pop shield, a little foam kind of spongy thing, it feels like, over this. And Zoom H1N packages come with a pop shield and a protective case, and also a little stand and sometimes a micro SD card. You can also find this recorder just as a standalone product as well. So without all the accessories, I would recommend you get the accessories, by the way, because they really do add to the package, and you probably end up buying those separately anyway. So without the accessories, you can pick up the recorder in the UK, usually between about £80 and £90. And with accessories, it usually runs at about £105. But I have the recorder, and I've got a couple of pop shields for it, and I've got a memory card, and obviously I've put some batteries in there as well. So anyway, those microphones are at the far end, stereo microphones, high quality capsules, very sensitive. You'll definitely need a pop shield because they're quite sensitive to wind. If you're outside or if there's a little bit of a breeze, it's going to pick that up. And then coming towards you on the front of the recorder, we've got a dial just below the microphones, and this is for the input gain. So there's no you know, clever 32-bit float at this price point. It's a manual dial that you turn, so you would listen in your headphones to try and get that level right, to make sure it's not peaking. I would always urge on the side of recording slightly quieter, and then you can always increase the volume later. Now, if you press that button, it is actually a button that you can push in. That behaves as a kind of a select or an OK button. So when you're setting up things like the time and date, which you're prompted to do when you very first switch on the recorder, if you don't have sighted assistance available, you can just press that button repeatedly, and that'll skip you through those options. Below the dial that you use to control the gain, we have our screen, which shows you what the other buttons do, because the buttons are a little bit context sensitive, and how they behave will depend on the current situation. Now, I don't have enough vision to be able to see the screen, but quite honestly, I haven't really needed to. Below the screen, I've got a row of horizontal buttons, and going from left to right, these are audio. So that's the button that you use to change your input format, so the recording format rather. So you can choose different sample rates with waves, so you can do 44.1, 48 and 96. I think the default is 44.1, which is going to be sufficient for most contexts. And you can also record in MP3 if that's your bag and space is at a premium. The second button is a low cut filter, so that's for taking out some of those low frequencies like low rumble. Again, I tend to prefer to take care of a lot of this stuff in post-production, so I tend to leave these alone. The next button is a limiter, so if everything's a bit too loud, then the limiter will try to smooth some of that off. I think it can cope with up to 120 decibels, which is pretty loud. And then on the right of this row of four buttons, we have our auto gain. So this is the feature that brings the volume up when you're recording something a little bit quiet that's maybe, I don't know, far away or soft. Then you can press that, and you can hear the effect of these buttons in your headphones, and we'll talk about where you plug those in a moment. Just below the row of four buttons in the center, we have our record button. This is a circular button. I understand there's a little white dot in the middle of a red button. And you press this once to start recording, and then once again to stop recording. And sometimes I believe that people want that reassurance of knowing how much we have recorded or anything like that. We're not able to get that information, right? If you need all those kinds of details, then you're probably going to be better off with an app and maybe a microphone for your smartphone or tablet. But when you are recording, the way I feel confident that I'm recording is there is a play button just below that record button, and if I press the play button, it'll put a mark, the Zoom will put a mark in the file, which you can then use in your audio editing software to jump to the current location. So maybe you might want to put a mark for each question in your interview, or if you had to redo a little bit because you fumbled it, you said the wrong thing or whatever, then you might use it for that. However, if you're not recording and you press the play button, then any audio that is already stored on the SD card will be played. So if you have got a file on there already, then that'll start playing out through your headphones, or if you've not got headphones, then through the little internal speaker. So that's how I know that I'm definitely recording without being able to see the little recording light. Now, I mentioned the play button. That is actually the top right button of a grid of four buttons below the record button. So the top left of those is the stop button. Okay, so top right is play, and then bottom left is back, and bottom right is forward. And these buttons, they're quite low profile, so you will need some level of tactile sensitivity. I have to say the record button's a lot smaller than it used to be on the original Zoom H1, if you've seen that from a few years ago. This button is a lot more subtle, so you might want to just try and get hands on. And bear in mind, of course, that if you do buy something online, you can usually return it for a full refund within 30 days. Check with your supplier. Then below that grid of four buttons, we've got a little internal speaker. This is just literally for monitoring, just to check that your recording actually recorded. It's really quite a low quality speaker. It's not intended for listening to music or anything like that. So moving round to the sides then, let's start on the left-hand side. Right at the very top, that's where we plug in our headphones, just below where the microphones are. A simple, 3.5mm headphone jack. And then below that, we've got a volume up and volume down rocker, which will just change the volume that you hear in your headphones. It won't change, the recording. And then on the right hand side at the very top, there is a very similar feeling jack socket that is actually a line in. So you might plug in something like a lavalier mic possibly or some other kind of input into there. I have not done that, so I don't have a lot of experience with that. But if you were running a line from another device, you might use the Zoom in that way to record. And I think when you plug a line into that input, then it's going to bypass the built-in microphones that are on the right at the top. So moving towards you down that right-hand side, we've got a door for the micro SD card. Now, my unit did not come with one supplied, so I did have to order that separately. And I think you can go up to 128 gigabytes with the size of the cards. I think mine might be a 32, which is, even if you're recording in the highest quality WAV files, it's still going to be many, many hours of recording. So I'm not worried about that too much. Then coming down a little bit further, there is a delete button that is very flush with the Zoom. And then we've got one of those power switches that sort of clicks and then has a spring at the other end. So in the position most towards you, that's how you power on and power off, and you hold it in that sort of sprung position. And then if you move it away towards the delete button, then you get a little click. And I don't know if you can hear that. Yeah, little click, and that locks the buttons on the device, so you don't get any accidental button pushes. And then below that, we have a micro USB socket, obviously for connecting to your computer if you want to use this as a mass storage device or as an audio device. And when you do that, so I tend to use this more as a mass storage device when I want to transfer content from here onto my computer. What I do is I plug in the micro USB cable there, and then the other end into my computer, and then I switch on the Zoom. And once I've switched on, I press the third button of the row of four, and then the last button, the fourth button of the row of four, and do that sort of quite quickly in succession. And it then causes my Windows 11 to make the little bloop noise, and the Zoom appears as a drive in Windows Explorer, and then I can copy the files onto my computer. I've also managed to successfully, with the Lightning to USB camera adapter that you can get for iPhone and iPad, I've managed to connect this directly to my phone and then use the Files app on the phone to pull files off that way, which is sometimes more convenient when you're in the field and maybe you don't have your laptop available. So just on the back then, we have a circular mount, like a screw thread mount, to connect to a mic stand. And there is also the door for the battery compartment. Two AAA batteries are housed within there. Always keep some spare batteries with you, I would say, if you're using this as a field recorder. The unit I have is black in colour. It has a very matte finish, you know, quite sort of sleek feeling lines, but really, you know, pocketable. I mean, you could even put this in a sort of a shirt pocket if you just wanted to be able to grab it really quickly to get, you know, some kind of recording. And I have used this quite extensively, even though it's not the, you know, the latest and greatest or the most expensive. I just find, as a little kind of handy recorder, it works beautifully. So of course, the proof of the pudding is how does it sound. So just in the interest of full disclosure, you're currently hearing me on an Audio Technica ATR 2100, and the next part you will hear is going to be from the Zoom. We are now recording on the Zoom H1N, and I'm just going to move to each side so you can get a sense of the stereo field, and over to the other side. What I tend to find that if I'm doing interviews is that I will turn the mic so that I'm on one side and the guest is on the other side, and then that just gives me a little bit more flexibility when it comes to post-production, but usually mixed down to mono so everybody can hear that anyway. So there we are. So that is the Zoom H1N. Thank you so much for listening. Keen to know what you think. Do you have one? Do you have something different? Do you have something better? What would you recommend as being a, you know, a really useful, affordable, portable digital recorder to capture high quality audio when you're out and about? I'd be delighted to hear from you. And if you'd like to get in touch, our email address, as always, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. The Zoom H1, just one way to record. Callum Stoneman, how do you record?
My setup is pretty basic, if I'm honest with you. I use a, I've got an Olympus recorder. I think it's the Olympus DM770 or something. I've had that for years. I actually got it.
One of the talking ones?
Yeah, one of the talking ones, yeah. It's got like a basic screen reader in there. So, you know, all the menus speak and you can set all your settings independently and things like that. I actually got this for university a few years ago. I was given it as part of my disabled student's allowance for recording my lectures, you know, and taking notes. It's pretty good. The only downside I find with it is that it's very, very sensitive if you're using the built-in microphones to the sort of handling noise. So if you've got it in your hand and you're recording and you sort of move slightly, it really does pick that up.
Mm, yeah, that's always a risk, isn't it, with those built-in microphones. And I guess the same would be true with the H1, although fantastic to have those accessibility features that you have, the talking menus. A little bit more expensive, I think, the Olympus is than the Zoom.
Yeah, well, the Zoom is the one that I'm interested in trying out. I mean, when we were at the Inclusive Design Conference a few months ago, I know a lot of the, I was using either my Olympus recorder or just my iPhone for a lot of my recordings that I did there. But I know you guys were using the Zoom. Some of the other Kinect Radio guys were using the Zoom recorder. And I've got to say, the quality was fantastic as well. Absolutely brilliant microphones.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is the entry-level product, but I'm pretty sure some of the components, you know, come from further up the range. And of course, if you know, if you're willing to invest, 32-bit float is a good thing. You can fix recordings where there's a bit of distortion, but you do tend to have to spend a little bit more to get that capability. Maybe that'll trickle down eventually as well.
Yeah, hopefully. The one thing that I do like about the Olympus, though, although I don't use it very much, I like the idea of the dedicated device. I mean, the microphone on the iPhones, as I said, is pretty incredible, and same on the Apple Watch as well. The microphones on the Apple Watch are underrated, and you've got really easy applications like, you know, just press record and things like that. But I like sometimes, especially when we're doing radio stuff, I like to have the dedicated device, and then you don't have to worry about notifications coming through, and you make sure your Do Not Disturb is on, and make sure you've got enough battery, and just, you know, all these other little things that the phone's always doing in the background.
Indeed, yeah. So let us know, what do you use to record? Are you in the market for a new digital recorder? Has this been helpful, or are you happy to just record on your phone? It's the usual email address. Might not even send us a recording. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum, thanks a lot. We've had an email from Adele who says, I have bilateral retinopathy and I'm losing my core vision with peripheral vision in place. I use a white guide stick and I'm registered visually impaired. And Adele says, I bought a Samsung Fold and it helps me loads. I still work on a self-employed basis, but it's getting harder as I find the keyboard puts too much distance between me and the screen. Yes, that can be an issue, can't it, with laptops. I paid £1,200 for my Samsung Fold and now realise that I need to get a large Samsung or Apple Pro iPad to get the laptop capability closer to my eyes. And I guess the question is about funding, because these things are expensive. You got any ideas about funding, Callum Stoneman?
I'm not sure. I mean, this is a tough one. I mean, the RNIB do have a technology grant scheme, but I don't know how much that would apply in this case, especially if you were using it for employment purposes.
Yeah, so the other option might be to go down the access to work route. If there's a piece of equipment that you need, Adele, for access to work, then you can put in an application. I understand that the waiting list times now are down to about 3 months, which is still a long time to wait, but it's definitely worth putting in that application. If there's a specific piece of kit that you need to get your job done, then it's definitely worth an ask. Also, if something's for personal use, RNIB does have grants available, rnib.org.uk/grants, I think that web address is. So yeah, check out both of those options, Adele, and let us know how you get on. We've heard from Roger, who writes, hello, I'm very interested to learn more about Narrator. Where do I find out what version of Narrator I'm running and what version of Narrator should I be running? If my version of Narrator is not up to date, how can I update it? Is what Roger would like to know. Callum Stoneman?
Okay, the first two questions I'm not too sure about. I don't know how you can get the specific version number that you're currently running. And in terms of what version you should be using, I mean, that changes all the time, to be honest. But Narrator is actually bundled into Windows itself. So you can't check for updates to Narrator specifically. But if you're running the latest version of Windows that's supported by your hardware, then you'll be on the latest version of Narrator. So the easiest way to do it would be to press Windows I, which would jump you into Settings. And all being well, that should put you straight in the search box for settings. And just type in update or start typing update. And that should get you to the Windows update area of settings. And then just checking up for updates in there. I'm going to assume you're on Windows 10 because that's what those commands work for. I'm not sure if that still works in Windows 7 or 8. But If you can, I would say update to Windows 11, because that's where a lot of the development and new features for Narrator seem to be coming in. But of course, it's just whether your hardware supports that. But if not, then just check you're on the latest version of Windows, and you'll be on the latest version of Narrator that you can get.
Yeah, so Narrator is like VoiceOver in the sense that it's tied to the operating system that you have. So if you get your latest Windows updates, then you'll have the latest version of the screen reader. It's worth pointing out that Android works slightly differently, that you can be running a different version of TalkBack than the version of Android that you have on your device. Hope that makes sense. Anyway, somebody who's much better at explaining this stuff than I am is Hubert Pavalkovich. And oddly enough, he's along now with his latest installment on Windows Narrator.
Welcome back to episode 3 of the built-in screen reader series. We are focusing on Narrator again. In episode 2, we've shown you quite a few things, including navigating the screen in the basic way, finding and opening apps, changing speech rate and volume, finding out the date and time also. In episode 3, we will show you something called scan mode. Now, what scan mode is a quick way to move around the screen with the arrow keys and few other methods. Now, the difference with scan... Now, when it comes to scan mode, there are a lot of apps that use this mode by default, so you will not actually have to turn it on most of the time in order to use it, because it will turn on itself. The apps it is most frequently used for is email apps such as Outlook, or web browsers such as Google Chrome or Microsoft Edge or Firefox. So although this is a mode you can enable in whichever app you wish, and you can make navigation simpler, a lot of it will actually be turned on by itself automatically when you open certain apps. But if it doesn't, you can press Narrator key and spacebar to open it. Now, what we will show you is how to use scan mode in a web browser, in this case Google Chrome. So, what I have here is I've opened the Guide to Narrator page on Google Chrome, which I will Alt-Tab to, so hold down the Alt key and press Tab.
Complete Guide to Narrator, Microsoft Support, Google Chrome, 1 of 4. Scan, skip to main...
Now, I've pressed Control to silence the speech, and you might have heard a few things there. So, first of all, I've released the Alt-Tab keys as soon as it said Complete Guide to Narrator, and you might have heard Narrator say the word scan, followed by a little sound effect there. Now, what it has indicated is that scan mode is now turned on, as we are in Google Chrome. Now, I can simply use the arrow keys to explore the screen and have a simpler way of navigating. So I can use the up and down arrow keys to browse through the links, for example.
Link, support. Link, Microsoft 365. Link, office, button, collapsed, products.
Now, as well as navigating with arrow keys, which you can also do in Outlook, where I can go through my list of emails using the arrow keys, which obviously, as it's my private email, I will not do. But I can also read my emails by pressing Control and left and right arrow keys, for example, to read by word if I find a piece of text. But one very handy feature of scan mode in web browsers and on a web page is that you can browse through different elements on the screen. So what I mean by that, for example, is skip large chunks of the website by elements such as headings, buttons, text fields, checkboxes, and similar elements like that. So I will now press the number 1 on the keyboard for heading level 1, and we will see what we will hear.
Complete Guide to Narrator, heading level 1 banner landmark.
So it has taken us to the heading level 1, which is Complete Guide to Narrator. Now, heading at level 1 is, when it comes to web browsing, usually what the title of the web page is and where the main content of this particular web page, in this case the Guide to Narrator, will be. Now, I can also do H for heading of any level if I wanted to, rather than specify the level number. So if I press H again.
Table of contents, heading level 2 region landmark.
And it's taken me to the next heading, which is the table of contents. If I press Shift and the letter H.
Complete guide to narrator, heading level 1 banner landmark.
So as you can see, I can skip through large chunks of the web page without having to inspect every single element of the page, which if you are dealing with a very large web page, it can be a bit tedious. So thanks to the scan mode, you can quite quickly skip to certain parts of the website that might be of more importance to you if you know what you are looking for. For example, if you are looking to fill in a form, you might want to press the letter E, which should switch you to look for text boxes and what's known as edit fields, which you can then use to type in text. Or if you're looking for a specific button, you can press the letter B, and it could navigate you through buttons if you wish. So that is, in very simple terms, scan mode. Very helpful in many apps, but specifically quite helpful in web browsing. Hope you have enjoyed this episode. In the next episode of our built-in screen reader series, we will focus more on reading text.
We have come to the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for tuning in or downloading, however you listen to us. We very much appreciate it. We are out of here, Callum Stoneman.
Yeah, it's been a quick one this week.
Well, it's been interesting and a bit of a mixed bag, hasn't it? We've had all sorts on this week. So yeah, let us know, navigation, recording, even narrator, any of that particularly fancy. If you've got a suggestion, by the way, we love ideas. And it's usual address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. If you have a comment, question or suggestion for Tech Talk, we would be delighted to hear from you. But from myself, Dave Williams and Callum Stoneman.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.